Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner.
I'm Anthony McCarthy.
And the Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the Maryland State Mortgage Late Don't Wait program. For more information and personal counseling, the number is 1-877-462-7555. The reports in The Sun have been pretty glaring and very troubling when we all first started reading them. And I just almost – you'd think that some of the things we read about were actually things of the past and not the horrendous issue of rape. I wish it was a thing of the past, but it's not. But the idea that the kind of underreporting of these heinous crimes, what happens to women when they do report the crimes, and why, even besides this report, why so many women don't even report that they've been raped. So we're going to wrestle with all that this hour. We are joined in studio by Kathy Ferguson, who is director of the Women of Color Network at the Maryland Coalition Against Sexual Assault. Kathy Ferguson, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
Gail Reed is a Victim Advocates Program Director at Turnaround.
Yeah, thank you.
Pleasure to meet you.
Thank you
in the studio. Thank you for being
mm-hmm.
here. Carol Tracy, who was also quoted in this article, is Executive Director of the Women's Law Project in Philadelphia and joins us by phone. Carol Tracy, I appreciate you making this at the last minute and joining us as well.
Glad to. Thank you.
And Cheryl Goldstein joins us by phone as well. She is Director of the Mayor's Office on Criminal Justice. Cheryl, good to have you back with us so soon.
Thank you, Mark.
And you all can join us here, 410-319-8888. We'd love to hear from you, your thoughts and stories. We'd like to hear about your interactions with the police when it comes to sexual assault and things that might have happened to you. You don't even have to use your real name. Don't fear that. Just say what you have to say and join us here at 410-319-8888 or to comment on this. I'd just like to hear from the four of you your reactions to this report when it first came out. Let me start with the guests in the room and then go to Carol Tracy and then go to Cheryl Goldstein in that order for a certain reason. But Gail Reed, why don't you start? I mean, what was your reaction when you first heard this come out?
Well, I certainly have been aware that there's a problem. My program responds to victims in the emergency room, so we're dealing with the victims there. The detectives are often there, and then we do the follow-up, of course, with women. And mostly I deal with some of the women who have complaints about how they were responded to and how their cases were handled. And I am a member of the sexual assault response team in the city, so often try to follow up with the police and so on about those complaints. So I've been aware that often the approach, and I don't think it's just in the city, I think there are a lot of jurisdictions where the approach is really to question the victim's credibility, to sort of investigate the victim first, if you will. And we know that this is approach, but even this story, the extent of it, I certainly hadn't realized the very high rate of unfounding. I had no idea that Baltimore was first in the nation. Until Justin's article in the paper and some of the work that he had done on that. And I think it's a really positive thing that this is coming out. I think it's the response from the mayor's office has been really encouraging, and I think we're all interested in how we can move forward, because I certainly think the women of Baltimore deserve better.
Kathy Ferguson?
Yeah, I think I'd have to echo that. This is not new information to me. I've worked with various jurisdictions, police jurisdictions here in the state, and everybody knows or has reported that Baltimore City abates their paperwork. Prince George's County, unfortunately, has had the dubious distinction of being number one in forcible rapes. And when I've talked to that jurisdiction about being the lead in the state, they always reflect back and say, hey, Baltimore City, there's something going on in Baltimore City. And we've had trainers from across the country come in and do law enforcement trainings who have also echoed the fact that there's something going on in Baltimore City that hasn't been effectively addressed. And so I was very happy to actually see that the city is getting involved in this and that perhaps there'll be some further investigation about this issue. And certainly it does happen in across the country in multiple jurisdictions, but there is something very problematic. And from my perspective, dealing with women of color, looking at Baltimore County and looking and knowing that it's between 63% to 67% African American, what are the implications for women of color who are disproportionately victimized already? So that's a huge issue, and I think there's some within the research that will be done and the investigation. I hope that they do look at issues such as class, gender, gender identification, sexuality, and how marginalized communities are adversely affected by sexual violence, and how they're underserved insofar as resources, programming, and law enforcement response. So, and that said, I will say that I'm sure that there are plenty of great detectives and investigators and patrolmen that are working with Baltimore City Police. However, we do have to understand that there's something going on. I don't know if it's an edict or a mandate, but it comes from someplace that they've been allowing this type of unfounded classification to go on so long.
Mm-hmm. Cal Tracy, I mean, you had some very specific things to say in that article. I will explore a little bit in the show as well, but your thoughts?
Well, I wish I were surprised. I mean, I was certainly shocked 11 years ago when the Philadelphia Inquirer unearthed the same sort of statistics in Philadelphia. And while we worked on it with our city council and demanded a reinvestigation of cases, which in fact happened, we found that in a three-year period, 681 first-degree felony rapes had never been investigated in Philadelphia and another 1,700 sex crimes. So it, you know, it was pretty alarming then, but I always remember one of my staff attorneys got a phone call from a relative of hers in a major city saying that police all over the country were tuning in to www.phillynews.com because Philly got caught doing what everyone else was doing. And since that time, I have talked to the reporters at the St. Louis Dispatch and the Times-Picayune and of course, now the Baltimore Sun. And what I find so alarming is that it is taking investigative reporters to unearth this, that the FBI apparently isn't paying attention, and, you know, part of the Uniform Crimes Code is to make sure that there's uniformity both in reporting and in investigating of crimes. So I think the FBI is continually dropping the ball on this, as well as our local communities, and it's really alarming that in this day and age that these kinds of myths about rape still pervade the very institution that is required to investigate and solve crimes.
Shaw Goldstein?
Well, you know, I'm the novice on the call, and I was very surprised and troubled to learn about the high number of unfounded rape complaints and the decline in reported rapes over the past decade. And certainly, you know, I've spoken to Gail, and I've spoken to some folks at MCASA, and I have been very appreciative of the openness of the sexual assault community to help educate me and get me up to speed on some of these issues. And I think, you know, as you've heard the mayor say, you know, this is an issue that's a very significant and serious issue, and the data just on its face shows this critical need to immediately address the issue and to review the practices and the response and to, you know, work with the community that we have here to put best practices in place and to do this right and do it better.
Well, I want to stick with Cheryl for just a moment, Mark, because I guess my concern, and certainly I'm sure it's Cheryl's concern also, is that we have a mayor now that's spoken very passionately about getting to the bottom of this, that she was shocked by these statistics. But just real nominal research, we found that this has been a concern for years here in Baltimore. It's been talked about for years in Baltimore. Police Commissioner Clark actually did a study and an audit because he was very concerned about these numbers. And they found in 2006, Cheryl, they found that over 300 cases that were audited, more than 60 had to be reclassified because they were automatically found to be unfounded or baseless. And so we've been talking about this, at least publicly, in the Baltimore Sun and other publications since 2006. And now the police commissioner believes that we've got to move on this. We've got to get to the bottom of this, study this more. This mayor is now upset about this issue because she's just learning about these concerns.
And this was a Jane Miller interview with former Commissioner Clark that was done back in 2006 when this came out. The exact quote that Anthony was talking about is, he said, of 331 rape reports that officers had initially unfounded, auditors classified 65 cases, 20%, as crimes of rape that really occurred. But 331. Phew. I mean, this was 2006. So this is, I didn't know this until the producers pulled this out from the research this morning.
So I think that I have always said the same thing about issues like this. I think that certainly during my tenure, Commissioner Biefeld's tenure, and Mayor Rawlings-Blake has been in office just over 100 days now, her tenure, this is not an issue that we have confronted and have taken movement on. And I can't, certainly none of us can answer to the what people did or did not do in 2006 and previously. What I can do.
But Ms. Goldstein, before you go any further, you and this current mayor and this current police commissioner have been touting the reduction in rape statistics as a real accomplishment of this police department. Now we have to really question whether or not we have seen this great reduction in the sexual assaults of women in this city.
I think beyond question that, I think that people should doubt that. I think that what you see is information that the mayor and this administration had relied on is clearly in question based on these statistics. And you've got a commitment from the mayor and the police commissioner that there's going to be action and that there's going to be a change going forward, and that not just the police department is going to be looking at this and trying to fix this, but through the SART, you're going to have the police department, you're going to have the mayor's office, you're going to have members of the sexual assault community and advocacy community, as well as representation from the state's attorney's office involved in putting together a comprehensive action plan to address these issues and be proactive and make changes that need to be made.
Let me ask the four of you this question, and I was disturbed by a small quote that took place in Peter Herman's blog this morning, who's the Baltimore City crime reporter, a leading crime reporter, and because there's a tenor about it that says something about attitude towards women and rape, and what it and I maybe I'm taking too much out of this. Out of context, there's one little quote, but let me give it to you. And I don't know whether this, because I called to try to find out whether it was attributed to Lieutenant Thomas Uzurowski or whether it was Lieutenant John Foster. I'm not sure which one was said. One of these two men apparently said this. And the quote is, "We have a lot of people that are engaged in sexual activity in this city." When we're talking about issues of being police being jaundiced about rape. So I'd like you all to comment on that. I mean, what you think is, am I making too much of depth of that statement?
I don't think you're making too much of that statement. And I think it really goes to the heart of the issue. And I think the thing I have the biggest problem with the attitudes of investigators is they're investigating the victims. In investigation should be offender based, and if you are a rapist and you hope to continue your successful rape career, because you know most rapists are serial rapists, so right, they don't do it once. So who are you going to look for your next victim? And unfortunately, rapists do prey upon women who are likely to have their credibility questioned, who are vulnerable in some way. And those of us who work with victims understand this and understand that, those victims, unfortunately, there's a saying that bad witnesses make good victims. So if you select a victim who's not going to be seen as a very good potential witness in a case. She may be a sex worker. Maybe she's used some drugs. Maybe she's been drinking. Maybe she's a college student who's underage and drinking. Maybe she's a teenager who's out on the street who is maybe where she shouldn't be. Or there's so many vulnerable women to prey upon. And then you set that up with a detective who feels that his or her job is to sort of shake that story out, look for the inconsistencies. Well, if I'm an illegal, I don't really want to give that information, so I might lie about who I am. Well, now I have a victim who's lying to me. And so I think it sets up this cycle of, you know, the police officers will tell me, the city police detectives, some of whom are very good human beings and very good investigators and very sensitive to some of the victims, will also tell me, but you know, 40% of these victims are lying. And unfortunately, there's this whole cycle that happens. If I think my job is to shake your credibility, and if you have some reasons that you maybe don't want to be upfront with me, then it just plays out over and over again. And ultimately, if you question victims enough and you pressure them enough, they'll recant. And then you have a nice statement you can have them sign saying, this never happened, this, I made a false allegation, and go away and leave me alone. I don't want to participate in this anymore.
Kathy Ferguson.
And so then I look at this as, again, a community of color. And I hear the statement, and I think, how is this area or jurisdiction any more sexual than any other place? I mean, people have sex everywhere. That's how we have children brought into this world. So what is it that you're trying to say? And so I think the whole idea about, or there's been a question about who's rapeable, who can be raped? And an innocent victim or a real victim as opposed to another type of victim. And I think the stigma and stereotype that women of color have had has been of being sexually promiscuous. You've got the Jezebel stereotype of being too strong to be raped and not frail enough or weak enough. And so you have these, you know, types of mentalities that come into play. One of the things I discuss in my trainings is the movie Gone with the Wind. And you've got, you know, Scarlett O'Hara, and, you know, you've got the troops coming in, and they're worried about, you know, the houses being burned down, and the property being taken, and the raping and the pillaging of this innocent white woman. And you've got Mammy there. And so it's set up so that everybody has empathy and understanding and compassion for poor Scarlett and what she might experience. But yet Mammy is the one who has been systematically and historically raped from age 13, you know? And so there's no compassion for her as a victim. And I think communities of color still deal and struggle with that. And so this quote, to me, you know, it's not necessarily surprising, you know, that there's something deficient about Baltimore City that allows for this to happen, and that, you know, people want to lie about these type of crimes. And so it's very disturbing to me. I also want to comment on the fact that this is a gender-based crime. You're talking about crimes where women are overwhelmingly the victims and men the perpetrators, okay? You're talking about like 98% of the victims are women. And if it were any other crime, if it were burglary or robbery or arson, if you've been, you know, brought from a burning building, you've just escaped and somebody, you know, was an arson, you know, are they asking you, you know, what were you doing? Are they going to ask you or explain the consequences of lying? Are they going to say something about seeking camera footage? Are they going to say, you know, we're going to investigate cell phone records or focusing on inconsistencies? It's not the same. So what is it about these gender-based crimes, such as sexual violence, that is so different? And so I think that there is a lot of sexism. I think there's a lot of racism and classism when it comes to this issue.
Carol, Tracy?
Well, you know, I think a comment about sexual activity sort of underlies the fundamental issue here, you know, that rape is not a sexual activity. You know, it is a violent crime. It is the second most serious crime in the crime index, and it's really very, very serious. And when we started investigating these cases, I want to just make a couple comments that I think are important. Philadelphia, we ask City Council to have public hearings because our rape crisis community had been meeting with the police and detectives and prosecutors for the entire for the previous 20 years. We set up the first sex crimes unit in the United States was set up in Philadelphia. So they really were blown away by the revelations in the paper. Now, they knew that some things weren't going well, but the scope of them was beyond what they knew. So I'm not, the Women's Law Project isn't a rape crisis center. We're a public interest law center. And I spoke with the head of the Rape Crisis Center and said, we've got to do something, and we can't just sit down and talk to the police again because clearly they've been lying to you for 20 years. So we asked City Council to have hearings and really bring the sunshine in on this issue. We asked them because they control the purse strings to the police department. We wanted them to request information, and we wanted cases reinvestigated back to the statute of limitations. And it happened. And as a result of that, and because at the time the police commissioner, John Timity, said that the public was losing confidence in what was going on everywhere he went, people were asking questions about this, that he asked a group of us to do a review, a case review. And we continue to do that 11 years later. We're the only citizens group in the United States that reviews police sex crimes files. We look at all of the unfounded files, and we look at a cross-section of open cases. And I think it's a really good model. And we went clearly from a position of confrontation with the police to one of really good collaboration now. Each year, as we review those files, we find something different. And I will add, they're done completely confidentially. We don't walk away with a piece of paper, nothing. It all takes place at the Special Victims Unit. We are very sensitive about reviewing entire case files of the police department. But I think without that constant ongoing monitoring, there isn't going to be the kind of change that's necessary. Training's important, but we also learned at this time, a criminologist said to me, don't let training be the scapegoat for poor supervision. Supervision is everything. Every one of those calls that comes into Baltimore ought to be reviewed. You ought to look back for the last 5 years and ask the police, bring in, in Philadelphia, they brought in a whole new class of newly minted detectives, and they went in and they've investigated all of the work of the sex crimes unit. It was a very unpleasant moment for the police, but it was the only way the truth could be found out.
Cheryl, I do want to get the phones after this because get our callers in here, but would you think that should apply for Baltimore City as a way to begin this process?
Well, the SART's meeting on the 8th, and what we would like to do is get the input from the sexual assault advocates, the police department, state's attorney's office, about what the plan of action should be and what the best way is to move forward to make sure that there can be improvement and greater accountability in the department in dealing with these types of cases.
Let me get a call in here before we go to break at 410-319-8888. We have a number of people calling in, but let's first go to Kevin, who identifies himself from Linthicum, who's a detective who investigates sexual assaults. Kevin, you're on the air.
Yes, good evening.
Good evening.
You and your guests, real briefly. I've been a criminal investigator now for, I guess, going on 20 years, and I've had some experience, not with Baltimore City, but with another major city police department. Now, I'll leave it at that, but
okay.
We've had some experiences with Baltimore City. And one thing I found is that oversight and supervision in Baltimore City is lacking. I mean, and also, I see a police department that's really short on financial resources. They cut corners in some of the most critical and vital areas of the department. And one is the investigative units. I've noticed that at least, and I'm going back maybe 10 years ago, the Baltimore City detectives their caseloads were so far off the chart when you look at the national average. I mean, you had some detectives that were carrying 30 and 40 cases at one time. And, they had partners, and they only had one automobile and limited resources. So that's two detectives with 60, 65 cases. That's impossible to do any type of quality work. I think management of resources, when I say resources, I'm talking about manpower, also is a major, what I saw to be a major factor with Baltimore. I didn't see necessarily a resistance from detectives to really want to do quality work. I seen most of them wanted to do quality work.
Mm-hmm.
They really fight some tremendous, just some tremendous odds. I noticed that they fought there, and I can see where a lot of these cases could fall by the wayside just from not being able to keep up with the, and I'm not making excuses, don't get me wrong, but
right.
Just to keep up with, this is what I observed, just to keep up with the caseload, it's almost impossible. And that's sad to say, but there has to be some oversight and some cooperation with the prosecutors. I know we had the same issue years ago, and we changed things only because of the oversight, because of the amount of investigators and the quality of training of the uniform officers, who are usually the first ones to respond, and they are usually the first one to deal with these victims.
Well, I'm going to have to take a short break, and I want to come back and address that issue as soon as we return, as well as some others. I really appreciate you being the first caller up. When I saw who you were, I wanted to get your thoughts on the air right away. And I do appreciate you calling in once again. 410-319-8888 is the number here. We'll rejoin Kathy Ferguson, Gail Reed, Carol Tracy, and Cheryl Goldstein as Anthony and I continue to probe this latest study, that very disturbing study about the police response to rapes in our community. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner.
Good afternoon. I'm Anthony McCarthy. A tough subject, Mark.
It's a very hard subject, but one I hope the city will really wrestle with and deal with and change and figure out how to change. We'd like to talk about all your ideas about how to change that. We're joined by Cheryl Goldstein, who is the director of the Mayor's Office on Criminal Justice, and Carol Tracy, executive director of the Women's Law Project, who began to touch on what they did in Philly. Let's see what can be done here to follow that pattern. Gail Reed is a Victim Advocates Program Director at Turnaround, and Kathy Ferguson is Director of the Women of Color Network at the Maryland Coalition Against Sexual Assault. Number here is 410-319-8888. So we heard what our previous caller said, a detective, and what Carol Tracy, what you were saying a bit ago about what happened in Philly. So what do you think we should do here in Baltimore now? What should Baltimore do to address this really glaring problem, which we can see from this earlier report by Jane Miller 4 years ago, this is nothing new?
I really appreciated what Carol was sharing about what they did in Philadelphia, because I think she makes some excellent, excellent points. And one of those is, you know, we do have a SART. We've only been meeting for about a year. But it's really difficult without some sort of overarching policy. And I think the idea to me that the mayor's office and her office of criminal justice is going to get involved with the SART, and I think we need to develop as a city, the city council should be part of that. What is our response going to be? And I certainly like the idea of some training, but I like the idea that can't substitute for supervision. I thought that was a really good comment that Carol made. And so I think beginning with that, and that's going to happen as early as next week, that we'll begin to look at this. I think the idea of we have talked on the SART about starting a case review process, and I think it would be great for us to have some help from the Women's Law Project on how we can do that, perhaps with some of these cases that have been unfounded.
Review all the cases that have been
exactly. Right. And I think the thing that has to change right away is the practice of unfounding these cases so early in the investigation, that most of the people who are experts in investigation of sexual assaults will say you can't unfound a case until you have investigated it. And
That's right. You
can't unfound it because you have interviewed a victim in the emergency room who's been traumatized and you have questions about her story or whatever, or she recants, which is a great way to get everyone to go away and leave you alone. But that the practice of unfounding these cases after the initial interview is bad practice. And that's something that can change.
And one of the things it sounds to me
Carol
like
Tracy.
You're doing is it sounds to me like they are not even classifying them as crimes. In order to unfound it, you have to have it classified in the front door, so to speak, as a crime. And what they did in Philadelphia, and this practice has totally changed, they are not allowed to classify, to put any report, any sex crime that comes in as a report. They must take it as a sex crime, and then they figure out whether it's founded or unfounded. What they had been doing was putting it in a category called investigation of person, and it looks to me, from what I read in Justin's article, it's, you know, things where their calls for services are declined. So I think that the unfounded rate is high, but what is really shocking is how few cases are classified as rape in the first place. They're not investigating them at all. And that's what was going on in St. Louis, in Philadelphia, and in New Orleans, and apparently in Pittsburgh as well. I suspect that, as I said before, it's going on in most major cities. But it's that first response that the patrol officer shouldn't have the authority to decide whether or not a crime has been committed. That requires an investigation. So I think it's really important to pay attention to how the crimes are coming in and what route they're taking there, as well as looking at – because, quite frankly, if you looked at the numbers in 1995, there were about 600 – I think 600 to 700 reported rapes and about 62 – unfounded, which is in the 8 to 10% range.
Mm-hmm.
The same numbers were the numbers that I saw: 194 rapes and 62 unfounded. The unfounded rapes might not be so out of line, because I think the FBI does take a look at them. But what's out of line is the cases that are coming
in.
And some of the unfounded that I read about sounded completely outrageous as well. Mm.
Well, I mean, I think the studies that they quoted in the article, that 2 to 8% of rape claims are perhaps false. That's a far cry from what we're seeing here.
Right,
and that's typical of all crimes.
Of all crimes, exactly.
I'm glad you said that, Carol. That's an important point to make.
Yeah,
because we have our stereotypes about things. Let's go back to the phones and come back to all of our guests again. 410-319-8888. Jennings in Baltimore, you're on the air.
Hello?
Hi, Jennings. You're on the air.
She just mentioned about false claims that's been going on as well on dealing with rape charges, because I think I see that being very serious, and it really holds back on people that's really been raped, you know, that's really been victimized, you know. And I think all cases should be taken seriously, but, you know, cases like that, I just don't agree with, you know, people calling in, I mean, people accusing somebody of something. That never happened.
Well, I don't think that anyone would agree. I think everyone would agree with you that no one wants to support someone being falsely accused of a crime. I think there is a concern. And as Ms. Tracy said, I think that, Mark, the thing that was so glaring about Justin's report was that even if we accept this 2 to 8% as false claims, the number in Baltimore is so skewed that I'm not sure. And I certainly, and you know, I want to preface this comment by saying I have a huge amount of respect and worked with Cheryl Goldstein when I worked for the mayor's office. She's a dynamic leader in our city. But I'm not sure how anyone could have looked at these FBI statistics and not rang a bell and said, wait a minute.
Yeah.
Before we start touting this, before we start raising the flag and saying, look what we've done in bringing these rape convictions and these assaults, sexual assaults down in our city, look at this number. And Mark, I work at City Hall part-time, full disclosure. As people walked around City Hall today, anecdotally, women were sharing these incredible stories of friends who were discouraged from making reports by police officers, who were harassed by police officers when they called. Some cases, because it was a boyfriend or a former boyfriend, they said the officers were immediately dismissive. Now, you and I both know, we've interviewed cops for years. I have such respect and honor for the police officers. But something is wrong. And when we have a reputation as a city for trying to get out of this paperwork, I don't care if you've been mayor for 10 minutes. This is a problem that you have to attack with absolute ferocity.
Because I think that what we have here, and let me turn to Kathy Ferguson, and then a question for Cheryl Goldstein, that rapes go unreported to start with.
Mm-hmm. Yes, they
People
do.
People are afraid to report rape. Mm-hmm.
Stigma, a whole lot
it's
of
It's the most okay. underreported of violent
of,
crimes.
Of violent crimes. Mm-hmm. And that this kind of behavior that we seem to see in our police department just discourages women even more from, especially in communities of color.
Yes, that's so true. We did a study, I want to say it was in 2002. It was an NIJ study, and it was a little underpowered because we didn't have a lot of responses. But consistently amongst black women and white women, there was dissatisfaction with the law enforcement response. For black women, it was slightly higher. And the issue of race was brought in, actually, qualitatively, by some of the white respondents who said that they felt that if they had indicated that their perpetrator had been a black male, that they felt like they would have been taken more seriously. And so
the white women were saying
the white women, right, yeah, right. Who had been victimized. And we were very surprised by that. So I just lost my train of thought there real quickly.
We're talking about underreporting and women and how this will discourage even more women from.
Yeah. And so for black women, I think the statistics nationally are that one in three women in their lifetime will be a victim of some type of sexual assault. And that will typically be between the ages of 18 and 24. For black women, those rates are three times higher. And the underreporting is so dramatic. I can't really cite the resources right now, but there is definitely underreporting with that.
Mm-hmm. Cheryl Goldstein, I know that you've been hearing all this so far this hour, and I'm just curious about, as a woman who has been involved in the social justice issues before, before coming to City Hall, and the work you've done, and also as a woman hearing this in a women-led City Hall we have at the moment, I would think that we should have some pretty serious and focused and ferocious look at this to not allow this to occur anymore.
And you're going to. And I think that all of the things that everyone has raised on the show in terms of looking at procedures and protocol and training and leadership, those are all issues that have to be addressed. It isn't one thing that's going to fix this problem within the police department in the city. And it took a while for it to get this way. It is very problematic. It is very disturbing. And you've got a very strong commitment from this mayor, from my office, from the police commissioner, to look at all of the issues contributing to the problem and to not only find solutions and work with partners, but to implement those solutions.
The one thing I would also add, Cheryl, is that as Ms. Tracy said from Philadelphia, that we've got to not just look forward. And I think that your leadership on that, and I think the mayor was so smart to put you at the head of this. But we've got to look back to all of these cases that these police officers and these investigators immediately dismissed. Because there are women in this city, Cheryl, who are sitting there hearing this show and they're saying, that officer came to me and made me, and already heartbroken and stigmatized and traumatized, made me so afraid of maybe what's in my background, maybe what I do, or maybe I had that cocktail that night, that I could not move forward. There are women who have been sexually assaulted in this city who need justice, and we need to look at those cases from the past.
I think there are probably a lot of victims that are going to appreciate hearing you say that, because it's you can't lose sight of two things I think are really important. And one is it's very, very traumatizing for these victims. And it's very – you may have a teenage girl who seems very street smart and tough, but she is devastated by the response of the people who are supposed to protect her, help her. It's – honestly, it's just it's really, really tough for these victims. And they – lose faith. And honestly, one of the reasons it's underreported is a lot of women are victimized more than once. And they'll tell us when they come to turnaround, I'm not going to tell the police. I reported it last time and it was horrible. So you have that issue that sort of is self-perpetuating. And the other thing that I think we lose sight of we're not catching any rapists. We're not taking these reports, and we're not taking these women seriously. You have that one victim in the article that talked about the guy in her room. Well, there happened to be a whole series of rapes in that neighborhood and break-ins and so on. So isn't the public a little outraged? It always fascinates me that the big concern is some guy might get falsely accused by an upset girlfriend or something, and yet you have whole communities that are at risk and public safety is at risk because nobody's catching these rapists. And they don't get caught. They don't go to jail. I think the statistic is maybe 1 in 16 actually ever does low. Any time.
1 in 16?
1 in 16.
Yeah, we had a horrendous case right to the point of what you're talking about in Philadelphia. It became known as the Center City Rapist, who also was a murderer. He strangled a young woman, Shannon Sheber, to death because a neighbor and the police were pounding on the door. They sadly did not break in the door to rescue her. But this was, in fact, in Philadelphia's one of its most exclusive neighborhoods, and it turned out that in several months before that, there were four other cases in the 4 or 5 block vicinity of this murder that had all been put in the investigation of person category. They disbelieved. One woman had throat marks on her throat from attempted strangulation. So, I mean, and this person then wound up leaving Philadelphia, going to Colorado, and getting caught in Colorado for doing the same thing in Colorado. He was a serial rapist. And when the forensics aren't taken, when people are discouraged from not going to the hospital, when it's not put in the DNA database, you know, DNA now can capture people.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we still have too many DNA rape kits sitting on shelves all over this country.
And
Kathy, go ahead.
Yeah, I wanted to say also, too, that you have to look at the prosecution of the cases.
Mm.
And, you know, you're looking at police officers who are completely understaffed. And I think the caller, Kevin, you know, highlighted that quite well. You might have like 6 detectives that are doing, you know, have to respond to maybe 300 calls, you know. And so that's pretty ridiculous. And so you have prosecutors who are actually telling police officers what cases to kind of throw to the side. And again, choosing real victims as opposed to other types of victims. And that's a huge case. I mean, huge problem. So you've got 2% of cases that actually go forward with prosecution.
We like to hear some of our women listeners. It's very interesting that whenever we do shows about this, that the vast majority of our callers end up being men, not women, on these particular shows.
Mm-hmm.
Though we have...
We've got to look out for those guys who might get falsely accused, I guess.
410-319-8888 is the number here as we look at the problem of underreporting rapes in this community, but also in police officers in our community. Apparently, the stats are pretty shocking that 40% of all 9/11 calls for rape are dismissed by the police, and over 30% of those investigated are deemed unfounded, which is just way beyond the norm anywhere. We are joined by Kathy Ferguson, Director of Women of Color Network at the Maryland Coalition Against Sexual Assault, Gail Reed, who just heard, Victim Advocates Program Director at Turnaround, Carol Tracy, who is quoted in this article extensively, Executive Director of the Women's Law Project in Philadelphia, and Cheryl Goldstein, Director of the Mayor's Office on Criminal Justice. I'm in the studio, of course, Monday with Anthony McCarthy as we look at this subject. 410-319-8888. And let's see who's been on there a long time. Mitchell, you're on the air.
Yes, hello.
Hi, Mitchell, you're on the air.
Yes, how you doing? I was reading the Beat paper today, and I saw the staggering numbers of the different cities and so forth, Pittsburgh, Denver, and so forth like that. I think it's a two-part full. We got to get to the real issue that we're hearing. Okay, so we want to have human mistakes. Different things are going to press us and push us, far as anger, far as anything. I think the big problem is, and I was talking with the screener, that when a woman says no, that point right there, anything after that is considered rape, which I believe. And what guy is taught that, okay, when this says no, that's it. But the other part is we live in a judgment-free zone or city of long as you're happy, sex sells, everything like that. So from the home, the woman is not taught or told, and some homes to say, hey, you know, cover up, don't just do that. When I talked earlier, and it was a couple months back about slots coming in, I'm not jumping subject, but I'm just trying to say, when we bring different things into Baltimore to support other things, and we have the police department constantly losing funds, which is going to enforce this rape thing, then that's a serious problem. We so worry about business coming to Baltimore, but we're not putting the funds in the police station to stay on these cases and say, okay, is it a faulty rape, real rape, and so forth like that. And that really concerned me having children myself.
And all right, but I want to pick out a couple of things you said and just throw it out to our panelists for a moment. I mean, I think that we have in the society understand that no is no, and we don't teach that enough, and I think in our schools and our communities.
Right about that. Mm-hmm.
But the one issue he said, this is something that happens all the time, and let's talk about this a minute, because it gets thrown back on the woman all the time. The way you dress, the way you appear, that all of a sudden this is your fault that this occurred.
Right.
But I think there are a lot of people and men and others who really believe that.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think it's a good point that the majority of men are not rapists. They're not.
Thank God.
So, you know, again, it's a crime of violence. It's a crime of power and control. It's, you know, I think, unfortunately, you know, young girls and so on are exposed to a lot of media messages that are very sexualizing, mm-hmm. and so on. And I think that's a different issue. But I think this is, again, another way of, again, focusing something on the victim, not on the rapist. So.
Mark, can I just say something real quick? When I was a little boy, my mother left my father because he was abusive. One night he broke into our home and he forced my mother to have sex. When the police came, I couldn't have been any more than 5 or 6. I was sitting on the floor in the kitchen, and I watched these officers almost talk my mother into dismissing the violence against her because he was her husband.
Mm-hmm.
And my mother had issues with self-esteem. And she, by the time those officers were done working her over, she believed that it was okay for what he did to her. And I just am heartbroken that there are women in this city who have no justice because they don't feel like they deserve justice. Mm-hmm. And so that's why it's so important that we call out attitudes, not just on the police department, but as Ms. Tracy said, in the FBI, our elected officials, but also in our communities, that we stop making excuses. Oh, she dressed provocatively. Oh, you know she's done this before, or she's got questionable character. She's got 8 kids already. If we all don't change our victimization ideas and stigmatization of women, then this is going to continue to happen, and we're going to excuse it. My mother has been forever changed by that incident. And I tell you, I have been forever changed by that incident. And I know that there are hundreds, if not thousands, of women, poor women, women who are who are marginalized anyway, who are sitting and suffering in silence right now because a police officer or somebody in their family or their ex-husband or their boyfriend talked them out of standing up against sexual assault.
There, I think in the community of color, and this goes back to your other question, there's a philosophy of protecting the perpetrator very often. And what we do know is that most of the rapes that happen aren't stranger rapes. They're people that you know, acquaintance or date or, you know, just somebody that's a frequent person, you know, in your particular community, postman or something like that. And so we know that this basically is happening. And so you've got folks, and, you know, you look at the disproportionate number of black males and men of color that are incarcerated already, there's that, you know, mentality that you want to protect and not contribute to further criminalization or incarceration rates of those within your own community. And so you have a tendency not to report. You have a distrust of authority. If you're an illegal immigrant, then how does that then figure into the equation? You know, that person gets deported. So there are those issues as well.
We are just about out of time. And I this is a very important subject. We're going to come back to it, and we're going to see how the city responds to this. And we're looking forward to having Commissioner Bielefeld on, who said they would come on to talk about this, and we'll bring some of the advocates back when he's here to talk about that with him. I think that would be important to take place. I want to thank Kathy Ferguson, Director of the Women of Color Network at Maryland Coalition Against Sexual Assault, for being with us. Gail Reed, Victims Advocates Program Director at Turnaround. Cal Tracy joining us from Philadelphia, where she's Executive Director of the Women's Law Project. And Cheryl Goldstein, Director of the Mayor's Office in Criminal Justice. And Anthony McCarthy, my co-host and dear friend. Thank you all for being here today.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mark.
The Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by Urbanite, Baltimore's free monthly magazine of ideas and innovation. This month, Urbanite writers look behind the gritty facade of some of the city's tougher neighborhoods. What they find might surprise you. Urbanite is available at over 800 locations and online at www.urbaniteBaltimore.com. The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Justin Levy and Christina Arison. We're engineered by Brian Boone. Our interns are Stephanie Mavronis, Richard Good, Felicia Faison, and Daniel Gillespie. Our theme music is by Wal Matthews of Clean Cuts. To hear this show again, podcast any of our past shows, hear new additional interviews, and contact information about our guests and their work, visit us on the web at steinershow.org. And for Public Radio, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community, I'm Mark Steiner. Take care.